I'm Jason Aponte. That's Steph Sanchez. This is the Bully Ball Podcast on the Gold Standard Podcast Network, the only 49ers podcast that won't begin training camp in a no-contact jersey. Steph, how are you?
I'm doing great. Had a busy weekend. July is flying by, which means training camp is just around the corner. So we're going to get some real football to talk about real soon, Jay. We're feeling good about that.
Are we feeling good about the fact that rankings are now taking over the entire football world? ESPN's exec and front office members list, top 10 quarterback list from Colin Cowherd, the top 100 NFL players list, PFF's top 100 players. It seems like if there's anything that you're looking for to make you upset, just check one of these lists and you'll get very upset. Right, Steph?
And it just makes sense, actually, that they're all dropping at the same time, because this is probably
the last time that you can get some dead air off.
The most dead that it's going to be before training camp. What are we sipping on, Jay? Hold on. What are we sipping tea. On? You got tea? What kind of tea?
Green tea.
We got?
Green tea, okay. Good for the vocals, good for the skin. A lot of healthy stuff going on. You know, you chop off the hair, you get yourself to a new spot. You know, you start thinking about your health and, you know, little stuff like that. But it's good for the voice.
This is why you still look like you're in your 30s, man. There you go.
Hey, man. I appreciate that. We're not going to tell the real age. We're not going to tell the real age, but, you know, I appreciate that. Speaking of age, go ahead.
No, can I just get something off about the stupid rankings? Is that it is rage bait, I feel like, most of the time. I think we all know that rankings are subjective, which is why I feel like it's really just mostly a waste of time to argue about them. Like, you could take them in. I think the ones that I care about the most would be the ones from execs and coaches, and that's kind of like a compiled ranking that I believe it's ESPN who puts that one out, right?
The front office people, the scouts. Mm-hmm.
So I kind of see that as the most relevant and the one that I would probably find most interesting. But that being said, I'm not going to sit here and get upset about what someone else thinks, because I am just one person and my opinion matters to me, but it doesn't matter to someone else who doesn't share the same opinion. So, I mean, I don't care about rankings. I have rankings fatigue. I have fatigue over what people got to say about the rankings and which rankings matter. I do not care. And on that note, Jay, go ahead and say what you wanted to say.
Well, I did want to say this. You're absolutely right, and they are subjective. But two things about that ESPN list that I find interesting. One, Caleb Williams is not a top 10 quarterback. I don't know what this list was on. And if it's about physical gifts, then I suppose. But there's nobody that's more inconsistent than Caleb Williams. And the reason that he has to come back at the end of the games is because he misses so many easy throws before the games. We have to start actually watching football games before we start making these rankings. Second of all, Jalen Hurts at number 17, absolutely perfect. No notes. That's exactly where he belongs. And that is coming from a completely biased opinion of mine and of the opinion that Jalen Hurts is a door dasher cosplaying as a quarterback. But I really enjoyed that one. I think the execs nailed that one. But, Steph, speaking of age, the 49ers are on the cusp of, I don't want to say a complete overhaul, but let's just say this. The 49ers cornerstone players are aging out. There is going to be Brock Purdy and a host of all new cornerstone players. The 49ers have to hit more in the draft to make that happen. But the 49ers do have some young players, despite being one of the oldest rosters in the NFL. So I wanted to do this exercise. I wrote about it today on Niners Nation if you guys wanted to check it out for more thoughts. But, you know, I'm going to give you pretty much all of my thoughts here. You know how many players are under 25 on the San Francisco 49ers offense, Steph? That are going to make the team.
I'd venture to guess it's a pretty small number.
It's 5. And Jacob Cowing and Ricky Pierce are both 25. So if we had done this before, Ricky Pearsall takes it. Here are the 5 49ers on offense that are under 25. Jordan James is 22. Connor Colby's 23. Dejon Stribling's 23. Kalen Black and Jordan Watkins are 24. Steph, those are our only options for best player on the 49ers offense under the age of 25. And we have to project who it is and which one it would be. It's like we don't even have a track record. Watkins barely gets snaps. Jordan James played one game. People didn't like what Connor Colby, you know, had to offer when he was in there. Dejan Stribling hasn't played yet, and neither has Kalen Black. But Steph, I'm still gonna hold your feet to the fire. You gotta pick one. You gotta pick one.
Oh, and I'm going first, huh?
Okay. You are going first.
This is what we're doing. All right.
Your opinion matters more than mine, so I want to go to you first.
Since, you know, the list is slim pickings here for the under 25 list, I'm going to go, again, like we said, this is mostly a projection because most of these players, we just don't have a big enough sample size to really have an idea. Again, I would have probably picked Ricky Pearsall too if he was just under 25, of course. But I'm going to go with another 49ers first round pick, which feels like the low hanging fruit, but I'll say why I do feel like this is the right answer, at least for me. I'm going to say Mikal Williams. For me.
Oh, we're talking about offense, just offense. We were going to do offense and defense. You got to pick one for offense and then we'll pick one for defense. Cause there's way more options on defense. The defense is way younger. I just thought it was interesting to point out to those few players under 25.
Yeah, let me
look at... So it's Jordan James, Kalen Black, Dejan Stribling, Connor Colby, and Jordan Watkins. And Cowling and Pearsall are both 25.
I'm going to say Stribling, just based on what we've heard people say about him so far. You always get players hyping up the rookies, but sometimes you got to listen to what they say about them, you know? If it's things that aren't so much about the on-field stuff, like, he's taking it in all good and, you know, he's learning quickly, things like that. Like, I feel like that could be anyone, right, who steps onto the field and you're just looking for nice things to say about them. When they're talking about speed, route running, things of that nature, something a little more tangible, then I think that's where – we really could pay attention to those things and feel like, okay, this is something. So I feel like with Stribling, that seems to be the case. He's getting a lot of good reviews from other 49ers players. So I would have to go with him. Another first.
Yeah, I'm gonna go with Stribling too. And I really don't like this because we don't have much of a track record with any of these guys. You know, the Jordan Watkins thing, there's just been this irrational confidence in somebody who hasn't played at all, couldn't get on the field even when he was healthy, lost snaps to Malik Turner, and I'm supposed to turn around and say, yeah, you know, Jordan, like, that's a projection. Just like what we're doing with Stribling. And Stribling, the only reason I'm choosing him is because, yeah, he was taken at the top of the second round. He was absolutely a guy that, you know, it was a controversy when it first happened, but people came around to it, and it seems like people around the league really like what Dejan Stribling does. So, yeah, the problem is Connor Colby is kind of left out of the idea of him being the left guard, who we still don't know who that's going to be. And then Jordan James, he played one game and was on special teams, jumps out of his lane, and Rashid Shaheed runs in for a touchdown. That's why he was not active on game days. He's not good on special teams, but he did look good running the football, you know, once Christian McCaffrey got injured and that game got out of hand. You know, Kalen Black, I think the world of, and I think he's one of the better draft picks, no matter where it is that they took him. I wish they would have taken him a little bit later, but I do think that Kalen Black is a good football player. But I still have to give the nod to Dejan Stribling. But I think the big point to take away from this is, offensively, those are your only guys under 25. Everyone else is 25 and up. In certain instances, even 27, 28 is a death sentence in the NFL. Mike Evans is 32. Christian McCaffrey is 30. George Kittle's over 30. Trent Williams is pushing 40. These are your cornerstone guys right now on this offense. So I do think it's interesting to kind of look through and just see who's under 25 and how many of those guys are actually difference makers. And then you start to realize the 49ers are on the cusp of like a rebranding, a retooling, whatever it is that you want to call it, with the offensive weapons, because all of their guys are aging out at this point. Now, on defense, Steph, we're going to switch it over to this, and then you can get into why you chose Mikal Williams. On defense, on the other hand, the defense is loaded with under 25 guys. And that was evident last year with the way that the defense played, and they were depending on many rookies. So here's what we got on defense. Mikal's 22, Nick Martin's 23, Siegel's 23, Evan Anderson's 24, Collins, Mustafa, Upton Stout, and C.J. West are all 24. explain why you chose Mykel Williams, who was only 22 years old. That is insane to me still to hear.
You know, honestly, a big part of it, I think, is the age. And so in my mind, he does have a lot of room to grow as far as the physical tools. When the 49ers took him, he was a huge, I think, a big projection type of player. But make no mistake, he was also very talented in his time in Georgia as well. So I think we got to put that into perspective and just kind of see him as this player who has a lot of room for improvement still, given his age, the physical tools that he had, and he was already good, you know, when the 49ers drafted him. Now, the big question with him, of course, is how is he going to look after his ACL injury? Is he going to look like that guy that he was right away? I think it's going to take him some time to really get in that groove again, as we see with most players, especially a player as young as him. But I still believe in the tools, and it's not just the tools. We've seen him apply those and also even last year get better as the season went on before his injury. And I know it was a short season for him, but I feel like we were starting to see those improvements and things starting to click. So I'm kind of banking on that, right, with Mykel Williams and him continuing on that trajectory. And that's probably one of the best bets I could make.
Steph, realistically, after a full season of Mykel Williams, this shouldn't even be a discussion with anybody else, really. Like, it should just be put to bed. Unfortunately, you have Mykel Williams, who is still learning his way as a pass rusher. As of right now, he is a very good edge setter. He's excellent against the run, and he offers the 49ers defensive line versatility. That's it at this point. The pass rushing stuff has to come with this, and the 49ers didn't draft him in the first round for him to just set the edge and be a good run defender. And if they did, that would be a horrific way for you to team build. But they didn't, I don't think. And I do believe that they believe that he is going to improve in that area. But when you throw in the fact that we need to see this leap, and then you have the injury, I have a different player that I believe is the best on the defense under 25. And I think that's Upton Stout. Now, I understand. Mykel Williams plays edge. He plays defensive line. That's an impact position. Defensive line can save everyone on the defense. But hear me out when I talk about Upton Stout. When you're looking at what Upton Stout is asked to do and what slot cornerbacks are asked to do, slot cornerbacks, I would argue, that job is harder than being an outside cornerback. And let me explain that. Outside cornerbacks, your job is to cover your, you know, the boundary receiver. If you're one of those lockdown guys, then you follow around. Okay, that's hard in itself. That's a gladiator type matchup. That's literally in the middle of the Coliseum, you against someone else who can win. Okay, but a slot cornerback has to cover smaller, shiftier guys, has to act as a run defender and an extra linebacker, and in Upton Stout's case, as a blitzer. Any 11 pressures, 8 hurries, a sack, 2 QB hits. He's not afraid to get his helmet dirty either. When we're talking about defense and we're talking about defensive stops on the season, he had, where is it? My goodness, killing my point right now, 27 and 70 tackles. And here's the only thing that he needs to improve on is in coverage. And it seems like people are going to go after him. But I would argue that his play got so much better down the stretch. And I'm not even going to use PFF grades because, again, I think we think they're subjective. I'm just going to use the games that he really showed out in. In Indianapolis in week 16, 5 tackles, he allowed 4 catches on 8 targets for 45 yards and had, I believe, 2 defensive stops in that game. 5 straight games with 2 defensive stops from week 11 on to 16 as a slot cornerback. What a defensive stop is defined is by PFF is essentially driving back the ball carrier, not allowing him to gain any yards and essentially either turning it into a loss or a net zero when you made contact. So that's what I want to make sure we say. The Indianapolis game right there. And if you want to do grades, fine. 84.8 overall, 81.2 in coverage, 72.9 in tackling, 81.8 in pass rush. That's great. And then Week 18 against Seattle, 27 snaps, 85.6 overall grade, 90.4 in coverage. Three defensive stops, two catches allowed on three targets for 2 yards. Look, there's things that he needs to improve on, but I think that the Raheem Morris jump that will happen with him and the difficulty of the position, I can set my watch probably to Upton Stout being more impactful right away than Mykael Williams, and that's because of the injury.
Yeah, I think you're completely right about that, and I think with Mykael, again, mostly a projection, mostly based on where he was drafted and the talent he showed at Georgia. Upton Stout, it's not a projection. We saw him play all season last year. And Rob, seven, though, some stats here. Upton Stout and Seahawks Devin Witherspoon are the only rookie cornerbacks in the past 5 seasons to record at least 5 passes defended and 10 quarterback pressures. That's impressive, especially given the fact that Stout is playing at nickel corner. Upton Stout gave up a 97.1 passer rating when targeted, dropped to 74.9 over the last 8 games. So to your point, seeing the improvement as the season progressed, he only allowed 1 touchdown all year and was 3rd on the team in tackles. Again, impressive with the amount of snaps that he played. You know, he's not in every down corner. So yeah, he showed us a lot last year. I was a huge fan of Upton Stout. You know, you look at his measurables, right? We talk about Mykael Williams and we're making that projection based on his tools, his measurables, right? But with Upton Stout, his measurables kind of leave you wondering if he could be that guy, right? Or at least that was a conversation when he was in college and through the draft. But we saw how he's able to kind of apply himself to play much bigger than his size. And, you know, I think as the season went on, probably diving deeper into film study, game slowing down for him, you see him actually become a really impactful player. So I love this one as well. I think he definitely has the potential to be the best player on defense or under 25 on defense this season.
More 49ers Gold Standard podcast after this.
Steph, out of the group that I named on defense, let's take out Mykael and Upton because I think you and I are both hopeful for them this season and they should both make a leap. Who's the person on this list that will make a surprising leap or someone that people are either counting out or just not remembering?
Okay. I'm going to say a name that I think people have been obsessed with, but we haven't really seen him, and that's Nick Martin, right, at 23. Mm-hmm. But this is his opportunity, really, where we're going to actually get a chance to see him, right? We would expect that we see him get more snaps than he has. I think when he was starting to get special team snaps, he showed out in the limited time last year. But now coming back from the concussion, going into camp and hopefully the season fully healthy and a little bit higher in the depth chart, I'd say that Nick Martin has a chance to really show us what he has. And I think he has the tools as well to excel. And this has always been a defense. We'll see with Raheem Morris, right? But this has always been a defense that has really put the linebackers on the map, right? And so with Fred Warner, with Drake Greenlaw, I think Nick Martin could fit in really well with the skill set there. And he'd probably be my vote, I think, of all the guys we had listed. That might and maybe not surprise us because, again, I think 49er fans think very highly of him already and have been clamoring for more playing time from him. But I think from just a leap perspective of what we saw last year versus what we could see from him this year, that's my vote.
Yeah, and that's not a bad one at all, just because, again, yeah, they drafted Jalen Duggar, but that feels like more of a project. You don't know what you're going to get out of Drake Greenlaw. They moved D. Winters. I still feel like the biggest vote of confidence this offseason was for Nick Martin, and I do think that they have a plan for him. I'm going to go a little bit off the board here, and I'm going to choose Marcus Siegel. And the reason that I am is just both safety spots are up for grabs, let's just say. And Malik Mustafa is 24. He's under 25 as well, too. That wouldn't have been a bad answer either. But I'm going to go with Marcus Siegel. because I do believe one, if not both of them, are going to be replaced. I'm talking about the safeties this year. And I just believe in Raheem Morris's effect on the secondary, right? In Atlanta, although he wasn't the defensive coordinator, they're in charge of personnel. Sure, they have Xavier Watts and they have Jesse Bates and they have AJ Terrell. That's formidable in its own. But all those guys were enjoying some of the best time that they've had in the league in that same system. And I think that Marcus Siegel has the tools. And we kept saying it week after week last year. Hey, he's in the right spot. He's just got to make sure he doesn't panic and plays the ball correctly. Is that something that he improves on? You hope so. But all the other stuff is there. So I'm banking on a Raheem Morris bump for almost anybody in the secondary. But I think if Marcus Siegel gets a chance, he could be the guy that takes the leap that nobody sees coming. And he is the most physically gifted of the three, right? Between him, Jair Brown, and Malik Mustafa, right? Has straight line speed, can get back. Those are things that if just in case you bite a little bit, you still have enough to get back. Both of those guys don't have that, which is why we saw the back of their jersey far too much. So I do think Marcus Siegel could be that guy, but it is going to depend on his growth under Raheem Morris, Steph.
I really, really hope that he can come around and make that leap in coverage, because I think he had the tools as far as being that come down to the line safety, working in the box. Like, we saw that, we knew that he was good in that area. He showed that in college. As far as coverage, there are worse ways to lose than at least if you're in position, like you were in position, right. The other ones you mentioned, they're not really in position. They're chasing down a play. They're getting burnt. Those are things you don't want to see. That doesn't leave you much encouragement for their development or the future development. Siegel feels like he just needs maybe tweak a couple things and he can get there. I am wary about players that are in position, though, because I remember Avery Thomas being similar. It was very frustrating. He was never never quite able to change that for some reason. But we're all hoping Marcus Siegel could be that guy, because that's truly what's missing in that safety room. Aside from the amount of youth that's there, it just feels like it's very one-dimensional as far as what these guys, the skill set that these guys have. We've been saying it, sound like a broken record. But Siegel does have a chance to maybe make that change. And so hopefully that's what we see from him this year. I like that one, because that would actually kind of be a bit of a surprise if he's able to turn that corner. But we believe in him, so we'll see.
And that'll cover up so much, right? Like, the 49ers didn't address safety. If they can get Marcus Siegel to be that safety, that's a feather in your cap.
More 49ers Gold Standard podcast after this.
Steph, we're talking about player rankings earlier, and a lot of that stuff is based on narratives, and there's a lot of reputation voting going on with those things, like Andy Reid being a top three head coach. No, not anymore. Like, it's done, right? Like, I don't know how much you've been watching the Chiefs, but that offense is done, right? Like, it's not flying and scoring 50 points anymore, right? Like, it's just not. If that was Kyle Shanahan, you guys would be crushing it. But he has won a bunch of Super Bowls, so again, reputation, they put him top three, which I could wholeheartedly disagree with, and I could name three head coaches better than him right now. Three of them are probably in the NFC West. But Steph, what is a narrative that is being spewed over and over about the 49ers that you feel will not come true this season?
Okay, I'm going to go to negative town for a bit, and it's not because I truly believe that it won't come true. I just want to preface that. I know that's the point of this exercise, but I do kind of want to just highlight a concern that I have with a positive narrative, right? And that is that this offense is going to be rolling on all cylinders and is going to be the best offense we've seen in years with the 49ers. And I think it was Amante Teo who said something similar-ish about this offense, that it was going to be really good and all that. And, we have said kind of similar things about our belief in this offense this year. And with Mike Evans coming into the fold, we're bullish on the receiving group and that working out. The wrench that I'm going to throw into that narrative is that it hinges greatly on the health of that group. And the reason why I'm not so sure it comes true is because it's one of the oldest offenses. Actually, it is the oldest offense in the league. 27.42 years old is the average age on offense. And then also injuries. And when you have an older group, I mean, injuries are already part of the game. But when you're getting older, the wear and tear on the season, you might run into that just a little bit more. Trent Williams maybe dealing with more injuries now at his age. We saw George Kittle deal with the Achilles. Yes, he's ahead of schedule. What is it going to look like throughout the season? We hope good. Can we bet some money on it? I don't know. Same thing with Mike Evans, right? Like it's really just this big question mark, and injuries have seemed to follow the 49ers for some years now. And you know, it feels like a curse at this point. So for me to come here and just bank that the 49ers are going to be one of the top offenses because of all these stars that they have, I have a hard time feeling like they won't get flats along the way, you know. That being said, they could still be very successful because they do still have Kyle Shanahan. They do still have Brock Purdy. But I wouldn't be surprised if we see another season, right, where we see guys in and out of lineups because of injuries and just having to find a way. I think last year Kyle Shanahan did a better job adjusting to injuries. But, you know, I don't know if it's going to be all gas all season for this offense.
This is going to be a landmark episode because you and I are disagreeing a lot. All right. I am not worried about this offense at all. Why, do you ask? The cast of characters that Brock Purdy was throwing the football to, those guys are future salesmen, future insurance guys. Some of them will be plumbers eventually. So when you say, hey, what if Mike Evans gets hurt? Well, Pearsall, Kittle, all of those guys injured. 49ers had a top five offense. Oh, Brock Purdy got hurt? Cool. Mac Jones, top five offense. As long as Kyle Shanahan draws breath, I will not doubt this offense. I don't think that was the problem with the 49ers last season. Sure, did the 49ers struggle against high-end defenses a la Seattle? Sure. Cool. They weren't the only ones. They rolled to the Super Bowl. Look what they did to the New England Patriots. But as long as Kyle Shanahan draws breath and is the play caller, considering who could be the quarterback, even still, I don't have an issue with the offense at all. I truly believe that they will be top five. The play calling, the way that they change formations and they're able to scheme up things for guys. Like, you're getting guys who can't get separation open. Like, and I'm not talking about NFL open, which is a step. I'm talking about, like, butt naked open by himself, pause. Like, with nobody around him. Like, that type of open. So as long as Kyle Shanahan draws breath and is the play caller, I'm really not too worried at all about this offense. And I do think, even if Mike Evans misses games, even if Ricky Pearsall misses games, even if it takes George Kittle a little while to get there, I've watched them put up points with DeMarcus Robinson and Malik Turner and Marcus Valdes-Scantling started week one, for God's sakes. I'm not worried about that. I am not worried about that. So for me, I really think that narrative, I think, is going to be fine. Do I think it's going to be the number one offense? I think that's what Manti Te'o was saying. That's a little crazy, right? But top five, for sure. I'll take that bet with anybody because you're looking at an offense EPA-wise, yards per attempt, and it goes down the list. Like, Brock Purdy's number two in yards per attempt in clutch situations. Lamar Jackson's the only one ahead of him. The number two and three quarterbacks in completion percentage over expected, which is essentially you take away throwaways, spikes, drops, and if you're hit, number two and three was Mac Jones and Brock Purdy. So, again, this offense, if Mac Jones has to play, you still have a baseline. If Brock Purdy plays, then you have a ceiling. So, I'm good with this, man. I'm really good with this, Steph, this one. I don't understand why you and I are battling, why we have beef, but here we are. My narrative that I think is not going to come true is the 49ers are not going to finish third in this division. And you know why? Because the same thing that I criticized the 49ers for kind of doing, which is just assuming that everything's going to go right, every single pundit and analyst is making it seem like everything is going to go fine for the Rams and the Seattle Seahawks. Like, they're not going to face any adversity. No one's going to be injured. There's never going to be a time where someone can exploit something. Like, it's just going to be the both of them, as far as I'm concerned, and hearing the way that they're being glazed, they're 17-0, and they're both going to meet in the NFC Championship, and they're both and one of them is going to the Super Bowl. Like, what is this idea that the only team that's going to face adversity is the San Francisco 49ers, but the Rams and the Seattle Seahawks are going to skate by and everything's going to be fine. No one's going to get hurt. No one's going to regress. Every single player is going to take a leap. That's all I've been reading about the Rams and the Seahawks. And it seems like every time someone talks about the 49ers, it's always, well, you know, this is it, the injuries, and it's coming. Yeah, you know, if injuries happen to either of those teams, if Matthew Stafford misses any games, they're cooked. I don't care. But can Myles Garrett play quarterback? No. If Sam Darnold goes down, they're cooked. If any of the important guys on their team go down, Puka Nacua missed time last year. What did the Rams do? They pivoted to 13 personnel, and they started using all of their tight ends because they ran out of receivers. Why are we making it seem like everything is going to go fine for the Los Angeles Rams and the Seattle Seahawks, and the 49ers are an accident waiting to happen? That part is frustrating to me. You can't predict what's going to happen. Sure, the track record of the 49ers isn't great, and they've been one of the more injured teams. But my God, the Rams are not going to have any injuries. They're not going to have any players that come back down to earth. The Seahawks are just going to be completely healthy and roll everybody. This is nonsense. They lost a bunch of players too. Why is it that only the 49ers are the team that can lose games because they lost players and they'll have regression and their age? But none of that applies to the Rams or the Seahawks, Steph.
I think, you know, both of those teams did deal with some adversity last year as well. They handled them well. When you look at the 49ers and all the adversity they dealt with last year, mostly centered around injuries and guys being in and out of the lineup, especially on offense, especially on defense, both sides of the ball, actually. I think they handled adversity pretty freaking well, too, all things considered. And I think that's the part that people aren't remembering when they make this claim, right? I think this division could be anybody's, and that's what makes it so dangerous. And I think all three teams have a reason to be scared of each other, right? Or not scared, but like, you know, to feel like it's a challenge to be in the NFC West, because they're all vying for the same thing and they're all just as competitive with each other. So, yeah, I mean, there's parity in the NFL. That's what's so beautiful about it from year to year. Circumstances change. There is adversity for every team. And the question is, how will those teams handle it? 49ers have been here before. Like I said, if you look at the 2024 season versus 2025, where we saw a similar thing happen, right, where guys are getting hurt left and right, the adjustments that Kyle Shanahan made, to me, in my opinion, were night and day. Like in 2024, it was almost like Kyle Shanahan expected everything would go right and he didn't know what to do when things didn't. Versus in 2025, like, you kind of saw them pick it right up with whoever was next man up. That's what you want to see, right? That's what we saw from the 49ers last season. And so I kind of feel like Kyle Shanahan has learned from past mistakes, and, you know, he's kind of built this team around being able to adjust now. And so I'm not too worried about some of the adversity. I think one thing that might hurt the 49ers this year is the travel. Like, that's one thing I'm worried about. But I think all in all, they have the culture, they have the coaching to be able to overcome a hell of a lot of things. And I think we could see that this year as well. So I'm not counting the 49ers out. I think that's a good one. That's one that gets thrown out a lot. Like, the 49ers have no chance of winning this division. They were in contention to win if they wanted to last year. I mean, I know they played, it wasn't.
They played in the last game of the season. For the last game of the season for the number one seed. I don't want to hear anything about what that schedule looked like last year. You talked about it. Parity is real. When you lose Nick Bosa and Fred Warner and Christian McCaffrey's trying to lug everything all together, you're starting Kendrick Bourne and Juwan Jennings at wide receiver. That is impressive. I don't want to hear about schedule. This is the NFL. Those guys strap it up and play every single day just like you do. And for me, I think when you're looking at all that and saying, oh, well, the schedule gets harder, it gets harder every single year because there are teams that will come out of nowhere and be good all of a sudden. Or you'll lose games to teams that you certainly should be. So for me, I'm not as worried about that. What I am noticing is impact players generally, when they go away, and I'll point to the 2023 season. When Trent Williams missed three games, the 49ers lost three games. Those are the only three games that they lost before the Super Bowl, right? But losing Nick Bosa and Fred Warner, and then you lose Trent basically for two games because he got hurt in the first play of the game against the Bears, it didn't derail their season. And it should have, because the 49ers pass rush was largely anemic even with Bosa. Then you lose Bosa and you lose Michael. You lose Fred, the backbone of this entire franchise and its defense, I would argue. I mean, I've seen this team do more with less, and I don't care about the schedule because it's still the NFL, that if this team even has a little bit more injury luck, I don't care who they're playing, I still will take the 49ers every single time because of the coach, because of the quarterback, because of the culture. And I think that's the part that everybody's just leaving out. If games were played on paper, the Philadelphia Eagles super team would have won the Super Bowl with Vince Young and Nnamdi Asamoah, right? So, you know, dream team they called themselves. Yeah, I've seen this movie before, okay? So the Los Angeles Rams and Seattle Seahawks glazing has gotten to a point that it's leaving out logical thinking. What makes you think that everything's going to go smooth for them? Nothing's going to go wrong. Puka got hurt last year. All of a sudden, the offense had to completely transform. And you can do that because you have a very good coach and you have a very good quarterback. But why are you assuming that nobody's going to get hurt? Nothing's going to happen. It's the NFL. Same thing with Seattle. Oh, you lose Reek Woolen and you lose Boye Mafe. Oh, it's fine. We'll be all right. Why are they going to be all right? Why is everything about them just being all right? The 49ers will lose a guy or two. Ah, this is it. They've lost their grip. You know, their window's closed. It's such a flawed and backwards way of thinking, Steph. And it really annoys me because some of these guys and these analysts that are saying there are guys that should know better than this, that do know better than this. But because they're caught up in the glitz and glamour of Myles Garrett and Aaron Donald, I don't care. I hope Aaron Donald comes back at this point. We're not ducking no smoke. I hope you come back at this point because beating you with all of those guys is just going to be sweeter. It's just going to be sweeter. So bring him. Bring him. Get Marshall Faulk. Go get Isaac Bruce. Go get everybody. Go get your peoples. I don't care. I don't care and the 49ers don't care. Bring them all. You can't be ducking smoke in the NFL. But everything is glitz and glamour with the Rams, and they're going to play in their own stadium for the Super Bowl. And, you know, and the Seahawks are probably going to be back. There hasn't been a repeat champion in a while. And you know why? Because things go wrong. Parity catches up. That's my rant, Steph. I'm tired of everybody just glazing. That's it, man.
Yeah, and I think, you know, obviously there's a lot of recency bias always in sports. But, you know, again, parity from year to year. I think the 49ers just as much in contention. And they get, like, they've been forgotten about for some reason because they're not the new kids on the block. Like, I think Seahawks, with the emergence of Sam Darnold there, they're, you know, they get a lot of attention. I think Sean McVay gets a lot of attention. And I don't know. Sometimes I just feel like the 49ers get forgotten about. And I think it is sometimes because of some of the injuries and so many guys out, but they still win games and they're still in contention, and that'll do in the NFL. It's all about winning games at the end of the day. And teams get better from one year to the next. I would say the 49ers have gotten better this offseason. So hopefully that applies into the season as well. Trash newbie asks, can you talk about Max Crosby possibly going to 49ers? Like, I'm so done with the Max Crosby talk, man. Like, all that happened recently was that Bleacher Report put out a think piece that they predicted Max Crosby gets traded to 49ers. That's it. I could have done that. Like, it doesn't mean anything. Like, maybe he does, but the 49ers had that possibility, that choice for a long time, haven't pulled the trigger. Could happen, but also could not. I mean, at this point, do something. It I don't want to talk about it anymore.
Yeah, that's not going to happen. Just because of, you know, the Raiders and 49ers, all that stuff, and, you know, the Khalil Mack thing. We can go back to that. I kind of wanted to go back to, I wanted to get off a hot take real quick, Steph. Sean McVay would be looked at by the analysts and the people who have so many negative things to say about Kyle Shanahan the same way if it wasn't for Matthew Stafford.
Yeah.
Matthew Stafford has saved Sean McVay from being someone who can't get it done, doesn't know how to manage the clock, chokes in a big moment. Matthew Stafford has saved Sean McVay from all of those allegations. Sean McVay is a very good head coach. I have no problem with you taking the top three coaches from the NFC West and saying those are the three best in the NFL. So that certainly includes Sean McVay. But oh baby, without Matthew Stafford, Sean McVay would be facing the same exact criticism that Kyle Shanahan has been facing about not being able to get it done, about not being able to finish. And that just harkens back to something that, you know, we have our what if episodes and everything. And I love Brock Purdy. Don't get it twisted. And I think that he played some of his best football last year. But man, would I love to see a top end, supremely gifted quarterback under Kyle Shanahan. That's it. Just a dream. Just a dream. You know, just one of those ones to be under Kyle Shanahan. And I'm not saying anything bad about Brock Purdy. I think Brock Purdy's supremely disrespected. I don't think Caleb Williams should be on any top 10 list without Brock Purdy. That's ridiculous. I can make arguments about, you know, guys who once, like, you know, Brock Purdy's better than Jalen Hurts. Jalen Hurts won a Super Bowl. So I'm not saying anything bad about him. I live in this fantasy world of Kyle Shanahan being to command his offense with one of those ones, a top end guy, 1, 2, 3, 4 guy. And to see what that would look like. That's all. That's all. Just dreaming out loud. That's it. I love Brock Purdy. I know it's not going to happen. And Brock Purdy is great for this offense. Just dreaming out loud. That's all. Don't yell at me. I'm not saying anything bad about that. And I did want to get to some of the chat or whatever stuff. But I just fantasize about, like, one of the top quarterbacks in the NFL.
We all do.
Like, undisputed, too. Undisputed. Like, not even where it's just like, why do you have this guy in the top four? It's like, okay, like, how we do the list now. Okay, Josh Allen, Lamar, Mahomes, like one of those ones. One of those ones, right? So that's all. That's all I'm saying, Steph. I know everybody's going to take this and take it out of context and say that I hate Brock. It's not that at all. I'm just talking about one of those ones in this offense that has been able to elevate quarterbacks like Nick Mullins and Jimmy Garoppolo. That's all.
More 49ers Gold Standard podcast after this. Now, without further commercial interruption, the conclusion of this episode of the 49ers Gold Standard podcast.
People are going to take it out of context, but they're also going to, they're going to be people who hear exactly what you're saying and will say Brock Purdy's one of those ones, Jay.
But that's fine.
And that's fine. But like, I don't think that the rest of the NFL and execs don't think that. And that's okay. Like Brock Purdy's a really good quarterback. You can win games with him. You can be in contention with him. You could even go to the Super Bowl with him. But I wholeheartedly agree with you, Jay. This is the one time we're agreeing in this show that, yes, would love to see Kyle Shanahan with a top five quarterback in the league, but because it feels like he'd be unstoppable in that case.
Like, all right, look, real quick, and I know we didn't want to talk about rankings, and I did want to get to some of the chat, too, to get you guys involved. Here's my problem, and if you're watching this on YouTube, you see the list, and I'm going to go through it for our audio listeners. Here's my problem with this list. I have no problem with Josh Allen, number one. Patrick Mahomes isn't the second-best quarterback in the NFL and hasn't been for a long time. He wasn't better than Matthew Stafford last year, even though he was injured. He hasn't been good the last few years. That offense is nowhere near what it used to be. That's someone living off of reputation and rings. Matthew Stafford's perfect right there. Joe Burrow's not in that elite tier for me anymore. You know why? You have to play football games. I don't care about when you do play if you don't play consistently. You can't be in that discussion. Lamar Jackson is by far the most disrespected quarterback player in the history of the NFL. In the history of the NFL. I saw something on ESPN that said, who's more fearful of their job, Jalen Hurts or Lamar Jackson? You've got to be f***ing kidding me. The two-time MVP is worried about his job? What are we talking about? Okay. Dak Prescott, number six. I think Dak Prescott's a fine quarterback, and I think he's getting his just due right now. But, of course, everybody's going to point to the playoffs. Justin Herbert has the number one PR team in the NFL. The number one PR team in the NFL. Look, I get it. I would love to have Justin Herbert as the 49ers quarterback. Don't even get it twisted for a second. But what on earth has he done other than have a rocket arm and have a beautiful girlfriend to make him be number seven, right? Drake May, one vote away from the MVP. Okay, fine. Everybody's hopping on the bandwagon. Any top 10 list that you see from year to year is going to have a player like that who bursts on a scene that everybody is going to be on. And that's Drake May, right? Jared Goff is consistent. He's a very consistent quarterback. I think he's right in that middle region with like Baker and all those guys. Just consistent, right? But he's not number nine, and Brock Purdy's better than him. And then number 10, Caleb Williams. Brock Purdy's better than both of them and ahead of them. I understand why you wouldn't put Drake May over him. I mean, you wouldn't put Brock over Drake May. He was one vote away from the MVP. Fine, I get that argument. Even if I think that last year might not be the strongest indication of what May will be, but I guess you're thinking, hey, he'll grow. Herbert, again, has the greatest PR machine in the history of the NFL. No one ever talks about the fact that they never win playoff games under that. You know, that also has to do with Jim Harbaugh, so we got to kill that narrative. Winning coach right there, buddy. Dak Prescott is just, you know, he's the Dallas Cowboys quarterback, and they fail in the playoffs, but I think he's a fine quarterback. Nobody's more disrespected than Lamar. I've got Lamar over Joe Burrow. You know why? Lamar plays.
No, it should be.
Lamar plays. So either way, I just think that when you look at this list, Brock's ahead of a lot of these guys. But it's still a matter of draft investment. Oh, last pick in the draft. Oh, Kyle Shanahan does the lifting. And I think the biggest detriment to Brock Purdy and his argument to be on this list is how well Mac played. I think that was probably the worst thing that could have happened to Brock, because then those people who already were giving Shanahan all the flowers are just going to say, look what he did with Mac. And Mac turned in one of his finest seasons as a professional. And thank God he did, because the 49ers, where would they be without him? But I don't think you should be looking at it like that. I think Mac gives you the firm baseline, but Brock gives you the ceiling. And it's not hard to say that Mac played very well, but Brock plays better and you need him to start.
Yeah, and I think, as you mentioned, where he was drafted, he continues to be a victim of that as far as, you know, when these rankings come into play. Also, the Mac thing, yes. So a couple of his worst games in the last few years have been on primetime. And I think that hurts too, because of where he was drafted, you have the people who think they're waiting for that shoe to drop. They think that he's just a guy, right? And he's being lifted. And when those performances happen, they use those to say, and again, it's cherry picking, right? Because it's kind of few and far between, but they use those as opportunities to say, I told you so, this is who he is. He's who we thought he was. And that's just not the case at all. But I think, you know, all those things combined just go to hurt Brock Purdy and his perception around the league. We all obviously think highly of him, some of us more than others, but I think he's a great quarterback. I'd put him above some of those quarterbacks as well, in the 9 or 10 spot. But hey, I mean, just another year of proving it to the haters, right? Just once again, right? And you know, maybe he likes it that way. I kind of feel like having a chip on his shoulder is good for him and good for this offense as well. Got another stat from Rob here. Brock led an offense last year with Juwan Jennings and Kendrick Bourne as top wide receivers, and they didn't punt for an entire month. That's right.
Well, I'm not worried about. That's why I'm not worried about the offense, Steph. That's why I'm not worried about the offense, man. As long as Kyle's there, as long as Brock is there.
Yeah. You know, I think. Yeah. Brock had a slow start to the season because of the injury, and he came back from the injury, had a bad game. And then I think from there, he was kind of just on a tear, though. And people don't talk about that because, again, like there's so many people who still are stuck on the idea that Brock's just not that good, that he's mid because of where he was picked. And that's all he'll ever be to them. But we know the truth. We know at some point, like, the respect's got to come. To be honest, for a guy like Jared Goff, like it eventually came, you know, I think he'll get his due, you know, I think league wide. So he'll have to continue to put strong seasons together like he has in order for that to be the case. And I think health in Brock's case would help him a lot too, to kind of earn that perception he has to play full seasons, I think.
Yeah, and that's fair as well, too. But again, I'll end it with this. Win a Super Bowl, and I don't give a shit where you rank them. Rank them wherever you want. I'll take the bowl. That's why, Eagles fans, it's funny to see you guys lose your mind over Jalen Hurts. You think I would care about where they're ranking my quarterback when I won a Super Bowl and I not only beat the Chiefs, I destroyed them and basically ended their little reign because they have not been as dominant ever since? Come on, man. All right. Let's get to some questions in the chat. Shout out to everybody in here. Make sure you drop a like. Thank you guys for hanging out on a Tuesday night with us. Seth Theorist 9 says, guys, are we going over or under on the 49ers this year, 10 or 11? I believe Rob's keeping track. I had it at 12 wins.
And I had 11, so that's where we're at.
There you go. Man, he's good.
He's quick good. With it.
Swipe Rob's the best in the business, man. He's good. It's up on the screen. Steph says 11 and 6. Jay says 12 and 5. But we both agreed on the fact that we're going to split the season series with the Rams and with the Seahawks. And I think that's fine. I think those games are going to be closely contested, and that's fine. You know, if you sweep both of them, great. I'd love to be wrong about that, but I'm also trying to be realistic and understand that those games could go either way. Or either way, like, you know, in terms of like how close the margins are and everything as well, too. So yeah, definitely. Quachi Toe says Burrow beyond overrated. I think Burrow is a good quarterback. You got to play, man. And if you don't play, I don't care what you do. Like, you know, when you're not, you know, when you're not healthy, and the offensive line stuff is tired because the Bengals were a top 10 offensive line last year, the top 10 offensive line. You know what's another narrative that's going to come true? And this is where I'm going to pivot it because I mentioned offensive line. So I don't know if you saw the composite rankings of different publications, different websites that have the 49ers as a top 10 offensive line. Now, I'm of the mind that the San Francisco's 49ers offensive line is right in the middle. Very average, yeah. Right? Very yeah. Average. But there was some eye-popping numbers that popped out of the PFF annual quarterback annual. And they have this one section that I think is... I mean, there's a ton of great information in there. And trust me, PFF is not paying me to talk about it. But there's so much in there for about like how good Brock was and how good Mac was and where they... Like, Brock is in the top five of many categories. And the guys around him are the golden boy Josh Allen and the MVP Matthew Stafford. But none of that matters for Brock. You know what I'm saying? Like, it doesn't matter. But offensive line-wise, they have a section where they show where the most pressures have come from and how many are the quarterback's fault as well, too, for holding the ball too long. So I believe it was 21 pressures have been attributed to Brock Purdy himself, not getting the ball out on time. Left tackle was very, very, very average. And Trent Williams essentially missed two games because, remember, he got hurt on the first play of the game against the Bears, and then he missed the next week against Seattle. The biggest problem with the 49ers offensive line, left guard and center. That is where the amount of pressure was, it's just right in your face and it's clear. They're at the bottom of the league, both of them, in pressures allowed, no matter who played. And we still don't know who the left guard is. But right guard and right tackle were at the top of the league in pressures allowed. So the Colton McKivitz-Dominic Pooney combination, it's fine. And again, I don't understand where this narrative about Colton McKivitz being the worst right tackle in football. I really just don't think you know what you're looking at. And I don't know how you came to that conclusion. But here's what narrative I think is going to happen. Steph, I do think the 49ers are going to have a top 10 offensive line this season. And that means that they will still have their struggles with better defenses, better defensive lines, just like everyone will. But I don't think the 49ers offensive line, depending on who the left guard is, let me put that caveat in there, will be as bad as people are just expecting it to be, and are expecting it to be a bottom half offensive line, when it has never been the case under Kyle Shanahan, no matter who was out there. So I do think they're closer to top 10 than they are bottom 10, despite what many people would think, Steph.
Yeah, I think they'll be average to above average most of this season, if I had to guess. And I think, you know, as far as the left guard position, they've brought in a lot of competition for that spot. Obviously, the best man's going to win. Hopefully, the best man is good, right? Like, that's kind of what we're wondering and what we're hoping. As far as left tackle, even if Trent Williams misses a game or two, even if he's not 100%, because despite missing two games, there were games that he played and he clearly wasn't 100%, right? So there's that as well with Trent. if he does miss games, though, I do feel like they did address, you know, backup pretty well, bringing in Vidarian Lowe. Like, I think that's a pretty good move in order to ensure that you don't miss too much. I mean, obviously, he's not Trent Williams. No one is Trent Williams, but I do feel like that's a pretty solid, you know, backup left tackle, and you could keep things moving even with Lowe. I feel like that's a quality backup. So, yeah, I think as far as all other things being more or less the same, and, you know, we say it here a lot that, like, cohesion and consistency is a big deal with offensive line play. Bringing a lot of those guys back is a good thing for the 49ers. They could build on what they had last year, improve, hopefully, at left guard. Yeah, I think they could definitely be, at worst, exactly where they were last year as far as where they ranked. And I think that was good enough at best. Yeah, you know, like you're saying, probably maybe even in the top 10 for this offensive line unit. That would do wonders for this team, I think, and hopefully for this fan base who doesn't shut up about offensive line. That's a narrative that needs to, you know, kind of die, in my opinion. Say what you want about the center, because, again, as Jay noted, I think that's the one – area that, you know, maybe could you
it's eroding, let's just say that
eroding could maybe use some improvement at some point. Wasn't going to be this offseason, I guess, but, you know, I think overall, though, the offensive line is good. All right, we can stop complaining about it and act like we're the worst offensive line in the league.
No, and if you need to find the worst offensive lines in the league, I just implore you to open up Game Pass and just watch other teams. Just watch other teams, and you'll say, how on earth are they functioning as an offense? 49ers weren't that. Sure, the 49ers' run blocking wasn't as great, but a lot of that had to do with the wide receivers on the outside, which is why I think they prioritized that with Dejon Stribling. One other thing to note that I think is going to help the offensive line, you know, Brock wasn't getting receivers who are creating separation. You know, if Kyle is springing these guys, it's on a play-to-play basis, and he's able to get Juwan Jennings wide open. Juwan Jennings can't get himself open. Kendrick Bourne can't get himself open. So when you have these guys who can't win independent of the scheme, you have to hold the ball a little bit longer, or you're a little bit more gun-shy. So that's why, like, offensive line is so threefold. It's, can you block? Can you get the ball out on time? And can someone get open? All three of those things have to be in tandem for a good offensive line play. Nobody is going to give you 5 seconds in the pocket, not even the best offensive lines in football. So you can get that out of there. That's why it was important, I think, for this stat to figure out how many were on the quarterback that is independent of the offensive line. And again, we have to take into account the 49ers struggle to separate, struggle to get guys open outside of when Kyle's able to use a condensed split and force a zone defender into another region where somebody can just run free into a free spot. But yeah, I'm nowhere near as down on this offensive line as a lot of people are, as many 49ers fans are. Sure, the 49ers got their ass kicked in Seattle, but they got their ass kicked in every aspect of the game. Was it just offensive line? Like, Seattle was doing whatever they want offensively. Seattle did whatever they wanted on special teams. The 49ers just ran out of gas, and they ran out of guys, and Christian McCaffrey was trying his best. Like, I'm not looking at that game saying if the offensive line protected better, the 49ers would have won. No, they wouldn't have, because they were getting dominated in every other facet of the game. So why would offensive line be that? So O-line is fine. It's going to be fine, but it is tied to quarterback play, wide receivers, and the blockers themselves. But it's nowhere near as bad as people would say. Now, I definitely would like an upgrade. Like I said, Jake Brendel's eroding. Is eroding. He's getting worse. And the reason that we harp on it so much is because center's so important in a Kyle Shanahan offense based on what they want to do running the football and pulling their center and having him run out. That's why Brendel's smaller, faster. That's why his three cone and his shuttle score is so good. That's what they like about him, is the ability for him to be able to get on the outside. But the problem is when he's forced to block up front in straight up passing downs, it's not good and it's not getting better. So we'll find out what the left guard situation is. Obviously, they're going to go with center. Those are the two spots that you feel the worst about. But the right side is set. So, again, it is what it is. I just don't think the 49ers offensive line is as bad as people believe.
Definitely not. There are way bigger issues that we'll be tracking going into training camp than offensive line. Although we will, as far as the battles, Jay, and I'm sure next week as we get closer to training camp, maybe we talk a little bit more about what we're expecting to see or what we'll be tracking. But definitely what shakes out of left guard will be one of the main focal points of camp this year.
Yeah, 100%. And I think that's really important to remember and to note about this team, you know, moving forward. Again, whatever happened last year is whatever happened last year, but there's a lot of stuff that you can point to that'll make you enthusiastic about this season. And let's take one more question and then we'll get out of here, Steph. From Observe Natural Evolution, the depleted defense still held up longer than the Kyle Shanahan ran offense. Again, year number 10. Oh, baby, do I have some numbers for you. The 49ers pass rush had less sacks than Myles Garrett, 32nd in the league, 3.15 sack rate. The Jets failed to record a single interception in 2025, and the 49ers still finished 30th in interception percentage with 0.95. The success rate allowed on defense, 48.05 success rate allowed on defense, the worst in the NFL. They didn't finish last in EPA per play allowed, 0.06, 24th. My God, that defense was dreadful. So I don't understand held up what? They held up nothing. They were getting their ass kicked all game against the Seattle Seahawks. All game. Sam Darnold was doing whatever he wanted. The 49ers couldn't stop Kenneth Walker. Like, what game do you remember? The 49ers offensive line is not the reason the 49ers lost that game. They got their ass kicked from the kickoff all the way through. And there's nothing wrong with saying that.
Yeah, it was bad.
The defense is, like, I knew the defense was bad. I knew the defense was bad. I didn't realize it was that bad. Like, how they won a playoff game in Philadelphia, thank you, Jalen Hurts, but my God, Eric Kendricks and Garrett Wallow and like, no pass rush. Man, and they had to manufacture offense.
And punt the football. And
oh, well, that's week 18. That's week 18 with the, you know, and that game was way closer. That's week 18. That divisional game, that game was never close. From once Rashid Shaheed runs back that kickoff, that game's over. You can check out. That's it. That entire game was over. So you're talking about week 18. You're not talking about the divisional game. Week 18, that offense was stifled by the Seattle Seahawks defense. I'll give you that. But that had nothing to do with what happened in the divisional game. Nothing. Nothing at all, because that team got absolutely railroaded and there was nothing they could do about it, Steph.
One of the worst performances I could remember, but especially in a playoff game from my Niners. But yeah, Jay, I think with that, I mean, we're good to call it on this one. Always good to talk about the future. And can I end on this, actually? It was, we were sure. Talking about the under the age of 25 players. And how there aren't that many. There's more on defense. I hope that's not like a Kyle Shanahan thing, that he just likes older players. And I hope that's just coincidence. But I'll just – because the 49ers need to eventually find more young blood. And as you kind of said earlier, retooling, there needs to be more of that going forward just based on where they're at with age on their roster. So if you think this was like a new renaissance in the last couple years of the 49ers going full send on young players, especially in the 2025 draft, they need more of that, especially on the offensive side, I would say.
Yeah, but the 49ers has so many holes defensively. So many. Because of the year before in 2024, you know, you were playing, you know, Malik Collins and Javon Hargrave, and that didn't work out. You let those guys walk. So the 49ers had to just really just go in the draft and go get everyone. And I think, again, the Robert Saleh imprint was all over that draft as well, too. And he, you know, it's still strange to me to turn the keys over to him, knowing that he probably had in the back of his mind, I'm only going to be here for a year. But fine. But yeah, I think they just had more holes. Yeah, I think the scary part about the offense is holding on to your assets too long until they're not an asset to you, or they can't be turned into an asset for anybody else. And we'll see. It's a dangerous game because Christian McCaffrey is literally carrying this offense. George Kittle's the heartbeat. Trent Williams is the best in the world, right? But there is going to come to a time where those guys are no longer those things, and then you can't even move them for anything. I wouldn't want to be in that position, and I wouldn't want to be the person that has to make that decision. But it is a decision that's going to have to be made eventually, because this team, and this is the way to bring it full circle, this team has to get younger. This team has to get younger. And the only way you get younger is when you hit in the draft. When you keep lighting draft picks on fire, it doesn't matter how old they are. If they're not contributing, you're losing the roster building of having cheap impact talent. And that's the part that has got the 49ers in this spot where every season feels like the last dance or the last hurrah. Like, it's because you've been missing on so many guys. And think about this, Steph. We don't think they're going to give Ricky Pearsall a second contract, because I think they're done with giving out receiver contracts to anybody, regardless of how well they behave. So you're going to have to keep drafting wide receivers. You know, Dejon Stribling's a part of that. You're going to have to go again in the next draft. You're going to have to go and do all that again. So the reason that the 49ers are due for like this kind of reset rebranding is because they unfortunately have missed on so many draft picks and guys that they were counting on. And remember, they didn't even have first round picks for a long time because of the Trey Lance deal. So it's just on top of all of these things has you in this position now where you're still relying on 30 something year olds, even though they're still great. Like, I just want to make sure we say that.
Because what I was thinking, Jay, was that, yes, like, the future seems bright with some of the players that we mentioned. But for a lot of the others, it's mostly a projection. And it's mostly hope until we see a lot of those guys and see how they play out. But we will see that here soon in the coming weeks and as the season gets going. So excited for that.
That'll do it for this episode of the Bully Ball Podcast on the Gold Standard Podcast Network. Guys, thank you so much for joining. Make sure you like this video, subscribe to the channel, hit that notification bell for when we go live. Make sure that you are subscribed to the 49ers Gold Standard Podcast Network, wherever you get your audio podcast. Make sure you follow Steph on Twitter at Steph49K. Follow me on Twitter at JasonAponte2103. Steph, we're getting very, 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 very close to pads, to actual football, to position battles, to non-rankings. And I can't wait to argue with people till I'm blue in the face about what happened at training camp when I'm not there and you're not there. For Steph, for Jay, we're out of here.
Peace.